Hello and welcome back to another episode of Your Drone Questions Answered. I'm John Dicko, here to find the answers to your drone questions. And today we have like a three-part question on drones and roof work or roof inspections. And so three parts of this question is, how can you measure a roof with a drone? Can you find water leaks with a drone? And is there any specific drone or feature to the drone that you need to accomplish this kind of work? So today I have with me Jason Koontz. He's the founder of 107 Technologies. Jason, you've been on with us before. It was a great conversation. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be back.
So you talked a little bit about 107 Technologies in our earlier episode, but since we've last talked, you've gone full time with this job, which is awesome. Tell me a little bit about 107 Technologies. What kind of work you do with that company?
Sure. So 107 Technologies was founded on the principle that people don't have to spend a lot of money to make their homes comfortable, really. If you remember, we talked last time about how somebody spent a lot of money because the person that was trying to help them was also trying to sell them something, whereas I don't do that. So what I do basically is I come in, I can evaluate the home and really find where the energy inefficiencies are for your air conditioning and things like that, and then also find water damage and stuff like that in the home and help you improve those and correct them so that your home stays not only safe, but comfortable and affordable into the future.
Awesome. And we're going to talk more about you and the work that you've accomplished with 107 Technologies later on in this episode. But let's go ahead and just kind of tackle the first part of our question, which is, how can you measure a roof with a drone? And so how do you measure a roof with a drone?
Believe it or not, it's pretty simple, as long as you know the correct steps. The need for the data capture and when you're flying your drone is the key part. Picture is only 10-15% of the work. So when your drone is in the air and it takes that picture, there's data collected with it on its position, the angle of the camera, and things like that. And that's the important part. So when you take these multiple pictures and then you use software to process them together to create an orthomosaic map, they call it photogrammetry. And when you do all of that, then you have a measurable map. Now, there are some things to do. First off, you need to have at least one known measurement, okay? While the drone can collect that information, it's skewed because of the altitude, right? The altitude isn't going to be the same from one capture to the next because of obstacles, trees, height differences in the home, telephone poles, power lines. There's just a myriad of things. Birds, sometimes, especially right now while it's spring, you know, flying too low over a tree can be very bad for your drone and the birds because they're not happy about you being near their nest. So there's a lot of things to consider when it comes to that. So having one known measurement is good. And I personally like to do two known measurements on opposite ends of where I'm capturing. So one thing I like to do is maybe take my tape measure that I can easily see in the drone. And I'll measure, say, the expansion crack of a driveway because it's close to the house. I measure that. I take note of what that is. Then I put my tape measure with at least 25 foot of length on the other end, on the opposite side of the house. And that way, whenever I take the measurements and I'm making sure everything is correct, I have two ways to ensure that, because if some of my pictures were a little askew, now I know. I don't have to guess. I know.
Okay.
The other thing is you got to get your roof pitch. So if you know what your roof pitches are, then it becomes real simple as well. How do you get your roof pitch? Well, there's a lot of different ways. There's some online things such as roofer.com. You can get when you do a self-measurement through them, you upload your map and then you hit the get the roof pitch and it comes up with the Google version of it and matches it all up. But another thing I like to do is just take one picture from, you know, where my camera is even with the top of the pit of the ridge and take one picture, just one. And then I just simply measure the degrees of that on my computer. And then I'm able to use that degrees as equal to what the pitch is. Another way that you can do it, especially when there's a lot of trees or the trees are up against the home and it's hard to do that, I just get myself, a lot of people use a phone app, but I find that sometimes the areas that are the most accessible or sometimes near where the service entrance is for the power. And I'm not really comfortable putting my phone up there and making sure there's no, I know they say that electromagnetic interference doesn't matter, but sometimes it does. So what I do is I have a monopod extension pole that I can then take and put, they call it, it's just a roof pitch gauge. You can get it at Home Depot or big box store, Lowe's, for pretty inexpensive. Get that, and I lean it up against there, and then I can just step back with my phone or drone and take the picture of that. So now I have a reference to what my pitch is later on. So when you add those things together, now you end up being able to get your roof measurements. But how you process the information afterwards to get the actual squares was what they call it for everything, right? It's a 27 square roof or that kind of thing. There's different ways to do that. And my personal one that I use, and there's others out there, so this is not something everyone needs to do. I use roofer.com because I can take my own orthomosaic, I can upload it, and then I can draw the lines myself because I visually saw the roof and I identified what is chimney flashing, what is wall flashing, what is step jet flashing. And I can actually put that into there, create a report from Roofer, and it tells me how many squares it is. It tells me how many linear feet of drip edge and all those kind of things based off of the measurements from that map. And that's all from me knowing that what my referential lines are, all because I know my roof pitch. And then whenever you put all of that in there, it'll actually generate the report for you, and it's all free if you do it that way.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. So it makes it real easy. And they have other things on there if you want other items. You know, you can use it as a way to manage your contacts with that kind of stuff. But if you're just looking for a way to process it once you have your map, that's one way to do it. But making sure you have that accurate orthomosaic is the first step.
Okay. Excellent. And I really appreciate you bringing up, is roofing.com or roof.com?
ROOFR.com.
Thank you. That's perfect. And I appreciate the kind of the step-by-step approach that you took in kind of explaining the measurement process that you do. So going on to the second part of our question, water leaks. I mean, is that something that you can identify with the drone, and how do you do that?
You can, but you do need additional information. I think the big misnomer is that there's no one tool fits all 10 seconds or less fix when it comes to finding information. Not if you want to verify it anyway. And you need verifiable data. And that's really the trick with it. So there's two main methods of finding a leak, with and without thermal, as far as I'm concerned. I'm sure there's other people with other ways. So let's start with the thermal, because that's probably what a lot of people think of first. So with a thermal, you put the drone up there and you've got the thermal looking around and you see a spot that looks suspicious and you say, oh, that's a leak. Well, is it though? So there's things that can look different based off of what they call emissivity and reflectivity. And just because it's a shiny surface, or rather not a shiny surface, doesn't mean that there's no reflectivity. So that's why a lot of people will recommend you get a thermographer certification, particularly a level one, because really for this, nothing more is needed. It's about the education and application of those two concepts, emissivity and reflectivity. And those are very important because of how materials radiate heat as well as reflect heat. So when you understand that, then it's easier, not foolproof, to understand what you're looking at when you're looking at that roof. There's been a couple of times when I looked at a roof and I'm like, oh, that's got to be a water leak. Well, actually, no, it wasn't. It was just where they previously had a pipe going through the roof, took the pipe out, and then shingled over it. So it created a thermal difference. There was no water damage, though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But then there was times I was like, oh, that looks like it was an old pipe because it was a perfect circle, an old pipe. Well, later on, I'm going to get in the attic and I'm going to see. Mm-hmm. I got in the attic and it absolutely was water damage because the nail underneath the shingle had backed out enough that I couldn't see it from the drone. And the shingle had water coming in from the side. And then when it came down into that nail hole, radiated out.
I see.
And it just, at that point, it was about a 2.5-inch spread deal. It was still wood there, but it was dark and black. And when you pressed it, you could feel the moisture. So that's where understanding some of these things and also getting out there and just playing with it a little bit can help you with the thermal type stuff. Now, it is easy to spot the areas that you need to look at, of course, right? Uh-huh. You spot those areas and then you verify it. And that's kind of what I'm going through here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do to verify it? Well, there's a lot of different ways. Whenever I'm doing a thermal inspection for water intrusion, the first thing I do is a visual inspection. And this is going to lead into the second way of doing this. Sometimes you don't have the thermal. But before I ever turn my thermal on, I look at the visual, because that's going to tell you. You're going to look at the spot of concern, but you're going to look around it and particularly above it. Water travels which direction? Path of least resistance. Shingles in particular are not waterproof. They're water wicking. Okay. So that's the reason why water can get underneath the shingle, because they're not waterproof. So that's why you had the felt paper, and in valleys and stuff like that, you'll use what they call ice and water or valley metal. And so that way it sheds the water down. When you're looking for a leak, I have a leak in my kitchen. Okay. Well, above your kitchen, you've got another 10 foot of roof above it before you get to the ridge. Okay, let's just imagine that for a moment. So is the leak directly above that spot? Well, it could be, but it also could be further up, because as water travels down, it gets inside and then travels down. Then it hits something on the underside that then makes it come down. I've seen things like that. The other part to that is I was once inspecting a spot for a roof where they put ice and water all around and underneath the flashing of a chimney. Every time it rained, it was like people were just pouring gallons of water into their house. Believe it or not, it had nothing to do with the roof section. It had to do with the chimney. The chimney brick was wicking the water in because the cap wasn't put on correctly.
I see. So,
and when it's not raining, it was hard to see that because it was put on incorrectly. Once you got up there and you took a look at it, oh yeah, see, those bolts aren't right. But you had to look at that spot, right? That's just a visual. Oh yeah, that does, from the ground, it looked fine, but not from the air. And so once you can identify that, sometimes you don't need the thermal, which is the second method, right? Just look for obvious damage first. Why spend the extra time? Well, you got a tree in your roof. That's probably where your water leak is. But let's face it, they're not always that obvious.
Yeah. Well, so, and it seems like the theme here is like you find the clue and then you verify. And
that's right.
The drone really seems to come in handy, kind of in your first example with using thermal, that it provided the clue and that you went and then verified. Or in kind of in the second example, without the thermal, it was almost like you found the clue and you used the drone to verify. And so,
yes,
it goes both ways there, but it's that two-step process, right?
That's right. And I will actually, especially on those ones that are a little bit more difficult, I'll actually go inside with a handheld thermal and I'll trace it out, because like we said a few minutes ago, right? Water goes path of least resistance. It's going to go whatever direction. So here's your leak and here's where the water's coming in. It's not always an A to B path. Sometimes it can branch off a little bit. When it comes to mold in a home and things like that, you really want to avoid that. So finding those extras is really what sends it home for a lot of customers, you know, because at the end of the day, you're there to help them fix a problem. And if you only fix half of it, then you've only done half your job.
Very cool. I don't want to say too much right now because we'll talk about it in our last question. But in this conversation we were having before we even started the recording, you're talking about how, you know, how important it is to view when you're doing this kind of work. And when you think about the drone is a tool in your toolbox.
That's right.
It's not necessarily the sum of everything that you're doing. And this work that you're doing right now is just the perfect example of that. Let's talk about this last section, this last part of our question, which is the tool. Making the drone that you're using, I would love to know the drone that you use.
Maverick 3 Enterprise Thermal. Is the current drone I use.
Very cool. And so thermal, so it has that thermal ability built into it.
It does. And it's got a really good resolution so that I can actually be a little bit away. We have Lake Pontchartrain is a large lake in Southeast Louisiana near me. So whenever I'm out there, sometimes the winds are a little crazy and you have a two-story house on top of stilts. High winds at the surface, it's even worse up top. And so being able to keep my equipment safe and further back is nice with that particular one. And they have bigger drones that can do with better resolutions. But when you're doing something like this, the home inspections, this is to me the ideal drone. It makes it easy to stay back, get the overall picture, and then at the same time, zoom in to get the detailed without having to move the drone a lot, so that I can be more efficient as I go around. And efficiency is what you need, because you never know when you're going to need to spend more time on something. And if you need to spend more time in one area, but you have to spend more time in all the others, it really can limit you. So instead of limiting yourself, make it easier. There's a lot of times that spending the money to get the nicer equipment up front will save you more than just time. It will save you money later. Case in point, if I was to tell a customer, yeah, I can come out and do that. It'll take me 12 hours. Well, wait, what? I just have one leak.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to spend 12 hours on it because it's going to take me that long to figure it out. No, I'm good. Thank you. Or I can say, I'm going to come out. I'm going to spend about 30 minutes, about an hour before sunset. And I'm going to spend about 30 minutes, an hour after sunset. And then we'll find it for you. Oh, that's it. I'm going to go process it and send you a report. So it won't be as soon as I'm done handing you a report, I have to process it. But then, yeah, we'll get that to you either that night or the next day. That's all? That's it? Yeah, let's do that. See, it's less intrusive to the line.
Yeah.
So that efficiency gains me the project, which if I don't get the project, that costs me money. That costs them their health or their safety or whatever the case may be. So being efficient matters, but not because, you know, you're trying to minimum maximize your profits. It's about just being able to get the job sometimes.
Oh, that is a very nice piece of advice for the DLA community there, for everyone who's trying to start their pave their own way in their own business. Awesome approach to taking on a client's work.
Yeah. Client centric. I mean, nobody's paying you to go out there and think about yourself. So really focus on what the client needs are, but it's really more about the client. If I keep my client in mind, then at the end of the day, that makes it better for me. It also makes it easier for me to, whenever I have an unusual request because of the situation that I end up finding, they're more likely to actually agree with me and say, okay, let's do that. Or they're going to accommodate me when I need something from them. Because let's face it, in this world, not everyone wants you to come into their home, but I need to get into the attic so I can verify this. And this is why. Well, that makes sense. All right, come on in. You know, take off your shoes, put on the booties, you know, don your nuclear biological equipment and breathe safe, you know, whatever you got.
Right.
The thing is that you're keeping your client in mind and then they appreciate that. But continuing on the equipment, mm-hmm. You know, the funny thing is everyone talks about the drone and it is important for those reasons we just mentioned, but it's not the only piece of equipment that you need to consider. So let's think about this. You're going to their home. Very few people are going to bring their home to you. When that happens, what do you need to support your activity? Well, everyone thinks about airspace and things like that, but are you going to need to be able to show something to your client there? Well, that tiny little screen on your controller, even as big as it is for the enterprise, it's still kind of small. So how are you going to show this to your client? You need to think about how you're going to deliver your stuff. Is your delivery something that you need to do within minutes or hours of you being there? Then that means you might need to do a in-field processing, which means internet connection or on the computer in your vehicle. You need to think about how you are going to keep all that charged. I love my laptop, but unfortunately that thing does not last more than 30 minutes. It does everything I needed to do, so I'm not upgrading it. But the battery just doesn't last anymore, especially when I process something. So I need to be able to keep it charged. And one 12-volt plug on my vehicle isn't going to take care of my drone, my laptop, my phone, and everything else. So you need to consider those sort of things. And as far as the type of equipment that you need to do a roof inspection, yes, thermal, that's what I have. But I don't always bring that out. I've actually done more roof inspections with a Mini 2 than I have with my Mavic 3 thermal. Why? Well, because sometimes it just doesn't need the thermal. If it doesn't need the thermal and I'm flying in a obstruction heavy environment, which one is better for me to risk? I'm still getting the quality I need with that. Sometimes I bring out my Mavic 3, my Mini 3 Pro. Sometimes that's a better option. Sometimes the Mini 2 is the better option. It just depends on what you need. If you never plan on doing a thermal inspection, don't buy the Mavic 3 thermal. There's no reason. Are you planning on taking your orthomosaics and turning it into a wall-sized poster? Okay, you might want to upgrade from the Mini 2. But if all you're doing is keeping it as a small report on a piece of paper for your roof measurements, 12 megapixels is just fine. So that's the part of that consideration. And then what you need to support those items changes based off of that. Do I need to make sure I have a good internet connection in the field? Do I need to make sure that I have good computing equipment in the field? How am I going to get from point A to point B and keep track of everything? Yeah. You know, you might want a whole separate device for that instead of trying to use just your phone. Sometimes that's handy. And how are you accessing these various things in and out of your vehicle? If you have a truck, okay, well, if you're going to have stuff in the bed of your truck and it starts to rain, what are you going to do? So you need to think about all the steps of your process and then decide how that equipment fits into it. And then that equipment will actually help you determine what is going to be best for your drone. If I'm going around and, you know, if I got a smart car, I'm probably not going to be taking a Mavic 3 Thermal M3T with a DJI RTK base station. I'm just not going to. I'm also not going to do that with a truck. because I don't want to put my base station in the back of the truck. So I have an SUV because I can keep it out of the weather. I can also have it to the side and leave it there for whenever I need it for my first and my last job, but not my ones in between. And these are the considerations that I tend to have.
Yeah.
But there are times when I wish I had a truck, and eventually I'll grow into that.
Yeah. But you're taking a holistic view. And I love what you said about just even thinking beyond the job itself, say measuring a roof or a roof inspection, and asking those kind of questions like, how am I going to deliver this to the client and what size and what format? Because the resolution that your drone is capturing dictates that. And so thinking about all those things ahead of time are excellent.
I have one client that she every once in a while will want me to process the map for them, but most of the time they just want all the raw data. Well, that's fine. I put it into a Dropbox or a Google Drive, depending on what she needs at that time, or their own proprietary one. And size doesn't matter. But I have another client that he wants me to go do a roof inspection for him when there's a ton of trees around because he can't get an Eagle View or a GAF report. So I'll go do that and I'll get those measurements for him. But then when he wants me to deliver it, he wants the overall ortho mosaic. But he also has a 5 megabyte limit on his pictures that he can take. Well, I haven't made too many orthomosaics that are that small. So you end up having to crop and down the resolution. That's actually one reason why I will use that Mini 2 as well. It's already a lower resolution. So it's easier to step it down without losing clarity.
That's great. You know, and this gets me thinking, and you've got to record another episode at some point because... An episode on things to keep in mind for client satisfaction and stuff like that. How to keep a client happy. You have so many little tips, levers to pull in order to do that. And you can only probably get that from the experience that you've gained over, you know, the past.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's lots of other people that, I mean, that might be a good like group discussion, right? Multiple people, because we're all going to have different takes, because we're all going to have different experiences. That could be a fun one.
Very cool. Well, I'd love to ask you, you've gone full time with this work since November of last year. You have accomplished a lot of what us in the DLA community are trying to do is really make a career out of leveraging drones in specific industries, finding your niche. What advice do you have for members of the DLA community who are looking to do what you do?
Persistence is really key. You know, there's a lot of times when it's easy to get frustrated or feeling lost or just like you're ready to give up. And David mentioned in one of his podcasts, I believe it was a podcast, it's been a while, over a year ago, that he was reading a book and it was 3 minutes or 3 feet away or something like that from success. And how people will give up at that point because they don't realize that that next step is what they needed. And I find that to be very true. There were times when I had no work and I had nobody asking for work and I didn't even have a possibility of it. And I was like, what am I doing? How am I going to do this? And then literally the next day, I went from nothing to more work than I could handle. It's important that at that point, you have had the experiences that you've had by not giving up, because then when you have the other experiences, you had to handle it a little better, right? It's communication, of course, but how do you communicate? When do you communicate? What do you do? How do you grow it? What should I be doing with this downtime? What do I need to think about? How do I improve? So it ends up becoming a balancing act, but you just really got to stay persistent. And if you can keep that persistence, then it leads into the second step of relevance. Once you finally start getting busy, don't let things go to the wayside. You know, if codes change, if you're a building inspector and codes change, you need to be up with the codes, because otherwise you don't want to say, oh no, that's just fine. And come to find out, you know, it's not. Or if you're more of a media photographer and the trend is going to one particular style and you have the capability of doing that style, but you don't offer it and you don't showcase it, you're not very relevant, because that's not what they're looking for. First, persistence, and then maintain your relevance. And when you do that inside your niche, you'll be comfortable. And I promise you, people will ask for things outside of your niche. You have to decide for yourself whether or not to do it, if that fits into your plan or not. Definitely stay persistent in what your original goal is, and maintain that relevance. Those are the two biggest things, I think.
I love it. I love, because the two parts to that, obviously, it's got to be very discouraging when you hit certain challenges, when you're at a place where you don't feel like you're getting the business and you start questioning yourself. But to your point, what are you going to learn? It's not going to be this easy, everything works out great. And so what do you do in those moments? You can learn from them and leverage that, or probably erroneously expect that everything should go great all the time.
Exactly. I mean, it's that fairy tale princess type thing, right? Even Cinderella had to have a couple bumps along the route before she became that princess.
So, exactly. Exactly. Well, this is fantastic. Jason, I really appreciate you coming back on and sharing not just valuable knowledge on doing roof inspections, but also sharing your own experience and to be able to kind of talk to you now after almost a year and seeing how far you've come is just really cool. And so I'd love to have you back on. I kind of think about you as our resident roof guy, but also to have maybe future conversations about customer service, success stories, what to do would be fantastic. Thanks for being on.
Well, thank you. I look forward to that privilege of working with you again.
And hey, if you have a drone question, we would love to find the answer for you. Go ahead and submit your drone question over ydqa.io. We'll see it there. We'll find the answer. Or if you're part of the Drone Launch Connect community, we see people asking questions all the time over that network. Go ahead, type it in. We'll see it. We'll find it, and we will find the answer for you. Until then, we'll see you in the sky.